According to the U.S. Census Bureau, the Latino population in Wisconsin has just about doubled between years 2000 and 2010. That rate matches counties in western Wisconsin for the most part, except for one. Trempealeau County, in particular, has seen its Hispanic community jump from 1% of the total county population in 2000 to 6% as of 2010. Now, if my math serves me right, that's a 600% increase, and any way you slice it, those are staggering numbers. And there's still a lot that a lot of us don't know about these new neighbors. This hour, we seek to learn more about the growing Latino population in western Wisconsin, why they come, the challenges they face, and how the mostly white population is reacting. I'm Rich Kramer, and this is The West Side. I'm Rich Kramer, and I'd like to welcome to the program five guests. First, I'd like to introduce Edgar Bernal. Edgar is a mortgage banker with U.S. Bank in Eau Claire, and he's a board member of a group, an advocacy group called El Centro de Conexión de Chippewa Valley. Edgar Bernal, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And I'd also like to welcome by phone Father Tim Oudenhoven. Father Tim is a Hispanic chaplain with the Roman Catholic Diocese of La Crosse who serves the Arcadia and Alma Center areas, and he's a pastor at Peter and Paul Catholic Church in Independence. Father Tim, thanks so much for taking the time.
Thanks for having me.
Also joining us for the first half hour, I'm pleased to welcome Drs. Sue Peck and Lisa Schiller of the College of Nursing at UW-Eau Claire. Sue and Lisa run a clinical program for nursing students that brings them to farms in western Wisconsin to offer medical and safety services to migrant workers. Sue Peck, thank you for joining us.
Glad to be here. Thanks.
And Lisa Schiller, thank you so much.
Thanks so much. Glad to be here.
And we also have a report coming from Hannah Weichel, the West Side reporter and producer. That's coming up in just a bit. But we want to hear from our listeners this hour as well. What do you think about this increase in the Hispanic and Latino population in western Wisconsin? Are you a farmer or a business owner that hires migrant workers? Or are you a migrant worker yourself or a child of one? Give us a call. We'd love to hear your story, and it would really help this program out. The number is 1-800-228-5615. That number again is 1-800-228-5615. Now, Father Tim Oudenhoven, I'd like to start with you, and as I mentioned in the lead-in, the U.S. Census Bureau estimates that the Hispanic population in Trempealeau County has really skyrocketed. And does that square with what you've noticed on the ground or in your congregations?
It does. I've been blessed to be here in Arcadia and Alma Center for the past 15 months, and I've just seen even more people coming in that time period, but I have been amazed how many Hispanics are here, whether they be working in manufacturing or in food processing in Arcadia or in the farming communities. There just, I think, are a lot more Hispanics in the area. I think a lot of times we notice. But, yeah, a lot of families, a lot of young kids.
And Edgar Bernal, it's not quite the 600%, but the Eau Claire, the Chippewa Valley, it's about a 200% increase in the population recently. What accounts for that? What do you think? What do you think is contributing?
One of the reasons I think is the way how this community works and how friendly they are. Being an immigrant myself too, I consider that the people how friendly they are and the opportunities that we have to grow. Including, like mentioning myself, the best example. I was also a farmer at one point when I first moved to Wisconsin, and 18 years later, I think have done pretty well for myself. So I think basically it's the opportunities that this area have to offer to immigrants. That's why people like to move here.
And you've moved here from where?
From Panama.
Okay. And how old were you when you moved?
I was 20 years old, and I've been here now 18 years so.
Well, I'd say congratulations on becoming a mortgage banker. walk us through just very briefly. We'll get more into it after the half hour mark of the program. But what was that like? What were some of the things that you faced? And some of the interesting challenges you didn't expect when you came.
For one, the weather. You know, it's one of the things that after 18 years, I don't think I'm ever gonna used to it. But definitely, when I first moved here, was going to school. You know, my plan was to come here, get my education done, and go back to Panama. You know, I met my wife, and, you know, 18 years later, here I am. But at the beginning, it was a little bit difficult because you are afraid, for one, the language barrier. Two, when I first moved over here, there was only a few Hispanic in the area. So it was even more difficult back then than what it is now. It was hard to see any other Hispanic in the area. There was only a few of us. And that was also a little bit more frightening than anything, just being in a place that you didn't know anybody, plus the language barrier. But these days, things have changed so much that there is different organizations that is here to help out, and that's what El Centro does for a lot of these immigrants coming this way.
And now I want to get to Sue Peck and Lisa Schiller. We know some of the numbers. Briefly, I mentioned them, and Your program at the college is setting out to help those that are probably pretty new here, the ones that are working at the farms. And Sue Peck, could you, first of all, this is a clinical program. What is a clinical? If we could just define that real quick.
By clinical, we take the students to a place where people receive health care and have them practice under our supervision.
Okay. So how did the program get started? The Healthcare for Immigrant and Local Farmers Clinical Immersion Program at UW-Eau Claire.
We started it as a way to have the nursing students who have some Spanish language proficiency to be able to practice the language along with the healthcare. Because you can have plain old Spanish where you don't talk to anybody but your classmates in the classroom, or you can learn a language with the people who speak the language and apply it to your work. Mm-hmm. So that was the purpose behind it originally. And then we knew, too, that the workers who were here on the farms didn't have any health care.
Why couldn't they? I mean, they can go to the emergency room, or is that not a realistic option?
Well, they can, yes, but that's very expensive. They often don't have an interpreter. It's the money. There's some fear that then questions will be raised and they might receive some hassle or some discrimination about, you know, who are you? Why are you here? Do you belong here? Mm-hmm. So they hold out.
All right. Now, what kind of services, what kind of health services are offered to these workers?
It varies a little bit each semester when we go to the farms, but in general, we check blood pressure, cholesterol, blood sugars. We do some basic teaching with diet, exercise, lifestyle changes to stay healthy. We give immunizations like flu shots, tetanus. This semester we've been doing TB testing. And we do some things with educating on farm safety, things to prevent injuries to these workers.
And Lisa Schiller, you are a nurse by trade, but also you've got a different spin on what you offer when you go out with the group. What do you offer for these workers?
Well, I work in conjunction with Sue to provide the health screenings, but I do have some background in agricultural health and safety. So the dairy industry has changed a lot. Production has increased, size of farms has increased, but number of farms has decreased. So they need these immigrant workers to milk. They're exposed to repetitive movement, noise, and dust. Chemicals, and in addition, they're working with 1,300-pound animals, so that does present some risk. So we bring that information on how to use personal protective equipment, how to approach some of the safety needs at the farm.
And so how do you get onto the farm? You must have to forge some pretty strong trusts when we're talking about migrant workers that might not be documented, and there might be people hiring them and all that. It seems like a dicey situation. Sue Peck, how does it begin? You first make a call or you walk up and shake a hand?
The way we started out originally was working through a woman named Sean Judge Duval in Alma, mm-hmm. who has a program, Puentes, or Bridges. And she works with the farm owners to teach the farm owners and the local people Spanish, and the people who are immigrants teach them English. And that's how we made our first connection, so that we were contacted through Sean by Dale Omfet Gable, who's a Spanish professor at the university. Mm-hmm. They knew each other. That helped get the link started. Once we got started on the six farms that we started with, by word of mouth, the farmers, with so much appreciation of the project, have continue to tell other farm owners about it. And now we've been up to 13 farms this semester where we've gone to deliver these services.
And how many of the workers are you able to reach?
We reach many of them, and some of the family members as well, on the farms. And I think
last semester I have the statistics for that. We saw about 120 workers overall, of which between 80 and 90 were Hispanic workers. Mm-hmm. And we had a total of about 230 contacts. So most of the workers, which is really nice, were being able to go back and follow up. So doing some teaching, going back, saying, well, what have you changed as a result of this?
So this isn't just for Hispanic workers on these farms. It's
absolutely anyone
and everyone, yep, who asks for the...
Right. And the farm population in general, farm owners and farm, you know, local farm workers often are underinsured too and lack that preventative coverage.
They often have like catastrophic coverage.
Exactly. But... with incredible deductibles.
Right.
Right. So what is the reaction, Lisa Schiller, from the people you go and help? Are they grateful or are they...
They're incredibly grateful, and I have to say the farm owners have just been incredibly supportive of their workers and of our work and, you know, giving us ideas on what we can do more. The workers themselves are happy to see us. It's, mm-hmm, it's really nice, especially after we establish a rapport. They know we're there. They come on in, and you see a big smile on their faces, and it's really a lot. It's very nice.
And with that, I'd like to go to Hannah Weichel's piece. She focused on the students at UW-Eau Claire, on at least two of them, that have had their lives enriched by this program and with interacting with this different culture. So here we have a report by Hannah Weichel, a West Side reporter and producer.
Rachel Phillips and Stephanie Kane are both seniors in the nursing program at UW-Eau Claire, and both say they're lucky to be a part of such a fulfilling clinical course. Kane says the program gave her the opportunity to improve health through education in an often overlooked community.
The Latino population, especially the migrant farmers in the area, are really underserved in that department. They don't have the knowledge to use to take care of themselves and to promote the best health practices possible. You know, eventually they end up ahead because then they can learn more about their health and know what's best for them.
Phillips says she feels like she's making a difference when the Latino workers take her health advice and pursue healthier lifestyles.
One of the immigrants had really high cholesterol, so I was like giving him teaching in Spanish about what he needs to do. And we came back 2 weeks later and I recognized him, remembered he had high cholesterol, so I went over to him. He like immediately told me everything that he was doing to lower his cholesterol, and I was like, someone listened to me, and like I was able to communicate in a different language what someone needed to do.
Kane says being culturally competent is expected in the nursing profession. She says all the nursing students in this clinical need to be proficient in Spanish and willing to respect a different culture.
For me, it's just opened my eyes to all that there is out there, and it's impossible for us as nurses to be able to know exactly everyone's cultural customs and languages and everything, but the fact that you try and the fact that, you know, you take it seriously and see that it's important to them is huge.
Phillips says the Latino migrant workers are the most trusting and thankful patients she has ever had. She is glad to help them live healthy because she says everyone should have access to health care, and without this program, these men and women would probably go without. For Wisconsin Public Radio in Eau Claire, I'm Hannah Weichel.
Thank you very much for that, Hannah. Now, Sue Peck, I'm wondering how this program is funded. Where you've been going for a number of years or a couple of years now, and when I spoke with both of you trying to tag along with one of these trips, it was a little late in the year for me, and you also mentioned if there's funding next year. Where does this funding come from, Sue?
The last 2.5 years, it was through some grant funding through the university. There's a special fee that students pay when they go to UW-Eau Claire. that gets put in a particular budget account.
The Blue Gold Commitment.
The Blue Gold Commitment and the differential tuition account. And the we apply to be one of the grant-funded projects. So it's a competition among other faculty on campus. And the ones that get selected are the ones that get funded. So we were fortunate enough for the past 2.5 years to have this funded, first as a pilot and then for the last 2 years as a full-scale project.
And are you expecting, Lisa Schiller, are you expecting this to be funded next year? I mean, is it successful enough, or have you made a new pitch to the Student Senate or whoever approves this money?
Well, actually, I just found out yesterday that we were not funded through the Blue Gold Commitment. However, I have had conversations with our dean, and we're hoping to have conversations with some area healthcare systems and some other sources. And I do believe we'll have funding for next fall, and then we'll have to continue working and really pitch what we're doing.
And how many students are able to be part of this program? Is it a limited number, or if you have, I mean, what is the limit of the growth in this program?
That we can take more students. So far, we've had 4 to 6 students each semester because they really need to be proficient in the language. Mm-hmm. We are not able to understand what the workers are saying to us if we don't know some Spanish, and then to be able to reply back to them. You really have to have some skill with the language. I speak a little bit of Spanish. I really require an interpreter, and that's where we use Sean, Judge Duval, and Dale Amfet-Gable alongside of us in order to provide that interpretation. The students have greater language skills than what I do, which is phenomenal.
Absolutely. Lisa?
We are going to increase, I believe, the amount that are going to be in here in fall, 8 students, I believe. And the other thing that's really kind of interesting is we're working with environmental public health faculty, and we're hoping to bring some of those students along on a field trip type event so they can actually look at some of the hazard identification on the farm.
Okay. Now, Edgar Bernal, you mentioned that you, when you first came to Wisconsin, you started out at, you were farming.
That's right.
What type of farming?
Dairy cows, yep.
And were you in that same boat where you didn't really have access to any other options for health care, or were you here on a work visa, or how did that work?
Mine was a little bit different than most of the people working in the farms these days. I came with a kind of sponsorship that I was going to school, working at the farm at the same time. But I could relate to what they go through these days, because even with on their student visa, I didn't think that I have the best health care that I could get for what I needed at sometimes. Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of the immigrants working on those farms, they feel afraid to go to any healthcare facility. And by what they provide in these days, by going to see them, I think that's a huge help. And I'm pretty sure that they really appreciate what the service that they're getting by getting the service provided to them.
Yeah, it's a very interesting program, and I do hope to tag along at some point and kind of feature what actually goes on, the interaction, because again, it's a mix of cultures, and it's just a really eye-opening experience, I imagine, for these students. Anything else that you'd like to offer about this, Lisa?
I guess I'd just like to say, not only has it been a great experience for our students to experience the Hispanic culture, it's been an opportunity for them to experience agricultural and
sure.
rural culture.
Talk about a culture in
yeah.
itself.
And so when they're going back and they're graduating and they're in the ER, even if it's in the Twin Cities and a farmer comes in, whether they're Hispanic or not, they really have an understanding of what that lifestyle is like. And they really have expressed an appreciation for what all it takes for those people to do their work.
All right. Well, Sue Peck and Lisa Schiller, thank you both so much for being with us.
Thank you.
And we again, I hope to do a checkup with both of you on this program come fall. Doctors Sue Peck and Lisa Schiller are both of the College of Nursing at UW Eau Claire. They have founded and are working with the Health Care for Immigrant and Local Farmers Clinical Immersion Program at UW Eau Claire. Thank you both so much. And with that, a reminder to listeners, we're speaking about the Latino community in western Wisconsin, and we'd love to hear from you. The number is 1-800-228-5615. Are you a migrant worker? Are you a naturalized citizen who's gone through these this experience, give us a call at 1-800-228-5615. This is The West Side. I'm Rich Kramer, and you're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for tuning in this hour. We've kicked off a series of programs on Western Wisconsin's immigrant populations. First, with a look at the Latino community. I'm joined by Hispanic chaplain Father Tim Oudenhoven of the St. Peter and Paul Catholic Church in Independence, and Edgar Bernal, a mortgage banker who immigrated from Panama and now works as, I mentioned, a mortgage banker here in Eau Claire, and also is a board member with the Latino advocacy group El Centro de Conexión de Chippewa Valley. And I'm sure I'm just massacring that pronunciation.
You're doing it just right.
And listeners, we'd love to hear from you. We'd love to have you add your story to the mix. What do you think of this growing population in Western Wisconsin? And are you an immigrant yourself from anywhere? Tell us what it was like to come to this region and become part of it. The number is 1-800-228-5615. Now, Father Oudenhoven, as I mentioned earlier, the population increase of the Latino community in Trempealeau County in particular is really, it's outstanding compared to the rest of the region and the rest of the state. What accounts for that? Are there some mega farms down there or what?
Well, I think that's part of it, is a lot of the farming has increased. There's been the introduction of a lot of the larger milk parlors where you'll see 1,000 to 1,500 cows in one barn that 30, 40 years ago might have had 100 cows. And a lot of Hispanics are working in those milk parlors these days. But also here in Arcadia, we have the Ashley Furniture Company and Golden Plump Chicken, who both hire many, many Hispanics. In fact, the Arcadia Ashley Furniture Factory is largely Hispanic on many of their lines. And that really brings in a lot of the Hispanics into this area because there are a lot of job opportunities, but a lot of variety in the job opportunity. And not to mention that Arcadia is a nice small community. Mm-hmm. So in my community, I have people from many different Latin American countries, from Mexico. I think I have just about every state in Mexico represented in my parish community. And a lot of people who come from cities want the smaller town atmosphere for their kids. It's a good place to raise their children. There's good schools here. There's good health care. Arcadia is just a very nice town to raise a family.
Now, and that you hinted or you touched on a point that we should make, that, you know, Hispanic or Latino is a very broad term, and mm-hmm. and it's so when someone that might not know better, they might think that every one of these workers or people are coming from Mexico. Edgar Bernal, that's obviously not the case.
That is correct. That term Hispanic and Latinos, it have so much variation on how people would take it. Hispanic basically will be anybody that speak Spanish or mm-hmm. is Hispanic descendants. And Latino is sometimes means more like people, they use like from Central America, people that are more like South America.
Okay. Yeah, because when I was looking at the census data, they had Hispanic / Latino, and I had to look up online to see what the difference was. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's exactly that. So it's good to know that this is a much more varied community than just coming from Mexico or one part of Mexico. But Father Tim, I had heard in some of the research that a lot of these workers are coming from Santa Cruz. Is that the case, or am I off on that?
Yeah, there's a good deal from Santa Cruz, but really a large variety of communities.
Sure.
I served up in Abbotsford before, and most folks up there, you know, Michoacan was a big area up there, but here it is incredibly diverse, and I have a hard time saying which group is more predominant because there's just a very large variety. Usually when people settle is someone from a family will come first or someone from a village will come first, and then they'll invite and help others with the cost to come up. So what you see is clusters of family, clusters of neighbors from Mexico all living together, working together here in Arcadia. So you have a lot of these clusters now present because a lot of people have been here for, you know, 8-6 years is a very common length of time of people here in Arcadia, where you have some people who are longer, like Edgar, but most people are 8 years or so.
And then you see them head back home? or back?
I don't see a lot of that. I mean, there are people heading home regularly, but most people want to stay here, is what I'm noticing. As Edgar noticed, mentioned, the weather is a factor. I tell you, when we had that late snow a couple weeks ago, a couple of my Hispanics thought the world was ending. It was pretty funny. But, you know, me being a Wisconsin boy. But most people, from what I can tell, have a desire to stay here. You know, their children born here, going through the school system here, and in reality identify themselves more with the culture here versus the culture in Mexico. It really is a hybrid forming right now.
Edgar Bernal.
And I totally have to agree with that. You know, for most of the people that come to this area, that they see how many opportunities there are here and how much they could potentially help the families back home. A lot of the families that decide just to stay here work pretty hard and send money back home to help their families. And I think that's the mentality of most of the Hispanic or Latino population that come this way, is just work hard and help the families back home.
Now, you mentioned when you first came to the U.S. and to Wisconsin, there was not nearly the population of Latinos here or Hispanics. And there were some unique challenges. Would you say it's easier for a person to immigrate to Wisconsin and work here or be part of this very different culture or be in this surrounded by this very different culture than it was 20 years ago? And why?
I would say there is a lot of truth on that, because right now, if you go to any grocery store, you will see somebody that looks Hispanic, and you should be able to approach that person. And if you don't speak any English, that person should be able to help you.
Mm-hmm.
18 years ago, you were pretty much on your own. If you didn't speak the language or you didn't know what you were looking for, most people would look at you like, what are you saying? I don't understand. And you would be pretty much stuck. You either have to turn around and find a different way to figure out what you were looking for. But these days, pretty much anywhere you go, somewhere or how, you will find a Hispanic person that will be able to speak both language. Plus, I think a lot of the American people are realizing that Spanish is a language that you pretty much have to learn these days, and a lot of the people would be surprised that speak Spanish. So,
what do you think when you see there's still a lot of pushback to that idea that why should we, you know, why should the city hall have information in Spanish, or why should there be a press one for English or Spanish or whatever? What do you think when you see that reaction?
I would say that the reaction for me is that it's most a needed thing. You know, like I mentioned before, the Hispanic population is growing so much these days that it is a need to have it. It makes everybody's job so much easier. As well as I should mention that there is so much help for Hispanic people also to learn the language, because that is the most that you need to try to learn the language if you want to move ahead in life. But also having that Spanish option to help some of these older people that come and work in farms, that they are not allowed to learn the language because of their education in the past or for whatever reason, but that is the most, to have the Spanish and the English options.
And Father Tim, I mean, I'll go back and forth between yourself and Edgar. But what are some of the challenges faced by the migrant workers that you deal with, or that you hear from your congregations in particular?
There's many things at play here. I think one of the things is we need to kind of divide the group. People who have more factory or manufacturing jobs oftentimes have more of a normal schedule of work. It's more of your 8-to-5 or maybe night shift type of job. People in the farms have it a lot harder oftentimes. These new mega farms basically have 3 milking shifts a day, and I know a lot of Hispanics who work 3 shifts a day, 6 or 7 days a week. And for a lot of people, they work very hard, they're very dedicated, but work is pretty much the only thing going on in life. You factor in, you know, being away from family, being away from friends, being away from a familiar culture, familiar climate maybe. And for a lot of people, too, it is immigration issues. I'm not one being a priest to really ask about immigration status, and that doesn't really come up. People want to share that move with me, that's fine. But there is a real fear there, too, for those who may not have their papers up to date or may not have any papers. There's a constant weight hanging over their head. So, yeah, people, there is a lot of concern there.
And What about for and again, Edgar Bernal, for the undocumented workers, as the father mentioned, I mean, what other challenges are there? But
I think, like he mentioned, a lot of the time is they are afraid to basically make any complaints. A lot of the times they do are overworked and underpaid. Mm-hmm. From the experience that I have talking with some of these workers, that's what it seems to be an issue. Either
underpay under minimum wage?
Sometimes under minimum wage, or sometimes they don't have any time, any vacation time or any time off. So they're working pretty much 7 days a week with no overtime or anything like that. So, and that's a lot of the time they're just afraid to mention or say anything because they are afraid to get being kicked out or lose the little income that they have coming in. Because of they don't have maybe legal papers.
And how about documented workers, like the workers that might be working at Ashley Furniture, Father Tim? I mean, are there still challenges for them?
Yeah, I mean, you've got a lot of challenges. I realize that a lot of people do work under false social security numbers.
And what do you mean? What do you mean? Like, how do they get them?
Basically, what they'll do is they will buy a social security number, an identity. They're freely available. And what's kind of interesting here is I have people from immigration come in to do teaching in my Hispanic communities, and they know that these numbers are being used by 20, 30, 40 people all over the country. But a lot of people work under those other names, other numbers, so there can be a great fear there. I couldn't tell you percentage numbers, anything. I do know that it happens.
Sure.
People, too, you know, if they're working under good papers, you know, everything's fine. I think a lot of them are supporting family in Mexico or in other places, and, you know, a large part of their income is going right back to their families there who may not have jobs, you know, supporting mom and dad back in Mexico type of thing. And that does place a lot of economic hardships on those families where someone who's not doing that with the same job may say, why are you struggling to get by? Well, they're supporting another family, another household in another country.
Now, this is kind of a culture shock maybe for some, you know, seeing the population grow like this in a mostly Caucasian, you know, mostly white region. Father Tim, I mean, do you hear about any incidences, any racism situations? Or is that...
I'd be careful to call it racism. I think there's just a lot of misunderstanding.
Prejudice.
You know, I was born in Wisconsin, born in La Crosse. I went to high school and college in UW-Stevens Point. You know, and, you know, I was born here and raised here, and it's only been in the last 8 years that I've actually started to see Hispanics, like in my hometown of Stevens Point. Mm-hmm. And now, being a priest, I've been doing this for 2 years and really seeing this increase. I think for us, we are a country of immigrants, but the Hispanics are kind of the new kids on the block, per se. And in many ways, you know, my ancestors came over 150 years ago to the Green Bay area from Germany, Belgium, Netherlands. There was Ellis Island. There was a very pure process, and everybody was doing that. Nowadays, you have one community trying to integrate in a very established community who's been here for generations, for the most part. And I think that does, it is hard. It's hard to change. It's hard to not understand where someone else is coming from. It's hard not understanding another person's language. And what I have found in the church is people are very good intentioned. People want to welcome, but I think there's some fear of not knowing how.
Sure.
Now, of course, there's exceptions to all of this. The other thing that's a negative is, you know, anytime there's an incident, you know, whether it be a DUI or anything, there's a Hispanic name there. You know, I will hear, oh, the Hispanics are doing that again. The Hispanics are doing that again. Oh, there wasn't crime in Arcadia before the Hispanics came. Whether that's true or not, I have no idea. But that is a perception out there, as well as that the Hispanics are bringing all these bad things with them. In my experience, I couldn't be farther from the truth. I have gotten to know so many devout and hardworking families who I consider, you know, to be my brothers and sisters in reality. And I'm in their homes. I have the privilege of visiting 10 to 12 homes a week, you know, and having meals with them. I have a phrase, si no hay comida, no hay padre. If there's no food, there's no priest, meaning my office is your kitchen table. And it's amazing in the Hispanic culture. It's amazing. I'm not 200 pounds right now. You know, eating with them and getting to know them and getting to know the other food, other foods and other culture, another way of seeing the world. The Hispanics who, you know, I'm blessed to live with have really opened up their lives and their hearts to me. And I have seen such genuineness and such openness where me being a you know, Wisconsin-born priest doing Hispanic ministry, I can see so much hope for further integration and union in the future, because we all have the hope, same hopes, desires, dreams, same aspirations, you know, same dedication. And it's just a matter of bridging through some of the language and cultural gaps, which I think will happen in time, mm-hmm. that I think we're really going to see, you know, a lot more of us being one community. That's really my hope.
Now, Edgar Bernal, in American history, we've seen every new wave, there is some resistance by the old wave that is established. Did you yourself experience any of that, or as your role with El Centro de Conexión, have you seen any of that pushback from the Caucasian community?
Me personally, you know, in 18 years that I've been here, I would say I could not be thankful enough to the community, because I have never experienced any issues like that. I think the only bad experience that I have at one point was that when I first moved over here, I used to like the Cowboy Dallas Cowboy, and that year the Green Cowboys beat the Green Bay, and I got a couple issues wearing a cowboy jacket in Green Bay.
Okay.
So other than that, honestly, I couldn't be thankful enough for this community. It's been great to me. So.
Well, so let's explain. Would you please explain for our listeners what El Centro de Conexión de Chippewa Valley is, and what the goal is, Edgar Bernal?
El Centro de Conexión is a nonprofit organization that was created about 2 or 3 years ago, and the purpose of us creating this organization was to basically educate as the American or the white people in the community, as also bring together different multicultural that are already living within between us. And for us, by trying to help, by translating, try to educate, and try to offer as much as we can to these new immigrants coming this way. And that's basically what we, El Centro, concentrates on doing, just bring people together to understand each other, that we are all a part of a big community, and that is a great city to work for and to live in. So, and that's what El Centro tries to do, is just bring people together to educate them.
Interesting, yeah, because it's not, there's education on both sides that needs mm-hmm. to happen. And any specific kind of services? I mean, do you offer any health services like what doctors Sue and Lisa were mentioning, or?
What we tried to do, we tried to be a center of research, or a center where people could go and get assistance if they need. If for some reason somebody needs to get some health assistance, then they will come and see us, and then we will try to let them know where they need to go. Something to try to educate and help translating. If for some reason the hospital need a translator, we offer service that we could go there and help them translate to some of the people visiting them. Something with is the police or the courthouse needs some help. We have volunteers that will help us, that will go and work as volunteers to help these people. So pretty much anything that will involve with translating to educating.
Very cool. And how many members are part of El Centro?
And as a member of the group, there is about 10 active members of the board. But we also have, I think, around 60 members that are in one way active or inactive, or some volunteers through the UW also.
Okay. Well, with that, let's take our final break here on the west side. We're talking about the Hispanic population in western Wisconsin, and it is increasing. It has doubled between 2000 and 2010. In Trempealeau County, it has increased by 600%. So that's what we're talking about. We'd love to hear from our listeners what you think about this increase, and how maybe you've adjusted yourself, whether you're a worker that has come to the U.S. or whether you're someone who hasn't really had any experience with this culture, and now you're seeing it more and more. Please tell us your story. The number, 1-800-228-5615. That number again is 1-800-228-5615. We will hear more from Father Tim Oudenhoven and Edgar Bernal after this. I'm Rich Kramer, and you're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for joining us this hour. We're talking about the Latino community in western Wisconsin. It's growing by leaps and bounds, and it's an interesting dynamic. Two cultures, you know, the mostly Caucasian culture is coming into contact more and more with a Hispanic culture. And we're talking about it this hour, what it means for the region and some of the challenges faced on both sides. If you've got a question or a comment for either of our guests, or if you'd like to share your story, do give us a call. The number is 1-800-228-5615. You can also leave your question or comment on the Westside Facebook page. Just go to Facebook and type in the search bar, The West Side. You should also like the Westside Facebook page as well. So with me this hour, I've got Father Tim Oudenhoven. He's a Hispanic chaplain with the Roman Catholic Diocese of La Crosse, and he's based at the Peter and Paul Catholic Church in Independence in Trempealeau County. And we've got Edgar Bernal. He's a mortgage banker from Panama who's been here about 18 years, and he's also a board member with the group El Centro de Conexión de Chippewa Valley. It's an advocacy group and for the Latinos, and it also seeks to educate folks on both sides, Caucasian and Hispanics, and tries to bring everybody together. So with that, I wanted to go back to Father Tim down in Independence, and I wanted to ask a little bit about how you interact with this community. I mean, obviously, you give sermons, but you also offer some other services, weddings. And I mean, have you done Hispanic weddings or migrant worker weddings? Or I mean, walk us through that if you would, Father Tim.
Well, basically, I have two communities, one located in Arcadia and one in Alma Center. And the diocese has put a lot of resources towards Hispanic ministry because it is a majority of the Hispanics coming in are Catholics. Mm-hmm. And so it's a fully functioning parish community, you know, baptisms, weddings. We have full catechesis programs that are bilingual, English and Spanish. I do quinceañeras, which is a 15-year-old celebration dedication. Hmm. We have other Hispanic devotionals that we do. And I think the big thing for us is really forming a community. So much I see is that the Hispanics are from all different areas, and there isn't a real common thread to communicate, to support one another. And the parish communities are oftentimes that place where people can come together, get to know each other, to support one another, and it builds that community up. The diocese also has many programs for Hispanics. We actually have two lawyers who work for the diocese out of La Crosse who do a lot of immigration cases. The DREAM Act, as it's been called, for deferred action for those who have been here for a while, for youth to get driving permits and stuff like that. They do a lot of work with Hispanics, and they do it at the ability they're able to pay. Myself, I have people coming in from immigration to talk and do education sessions. We have private lawyers coming in to do presentations. You know, a lot of the educational things are so important when it comes to the law, but also we have health fairs and things like that. So it's a wide variety of things, and you know, me as a priest, I'm very open to listen to the community and see what they're wanting, but also see what they can do for one another. And also looking at the community abroad, seeing what things we can bring in. Education is just so vital. And coming together as family is so vital. There's so many stresses in life. Us being separate and isolated just is not a good thing in any way.
Well, right, not for any group of people. Why do you think there isn't more cohesiveness? Is it because These people are coming from so many different parts of Mexico or Central America or South America?
I think that's part of it. You know, I've heard so many times from folks, you know, in Mexico, everybody knows each other. They all grew up together. You come here and everybody's just kind of thrown together. And it is a very new phenomena. I think long work hours also play into the fact that people just don't have a lot of time to share their lives with one another. So I think it's a number of factors playing in there, but I think that situation is really developing. I've seen both my parish communities, basically mass attendance, double in size. For instance, in December for Our Lady of Guadalupe, you know, we had almost 700 people in mass with 7 inches of snow on the ground when we started mass. We got snowed out and still had tons of people. It was one of the larger masses in Spanish in this area in history. And I just can't imagine, you know, next year, hopefully there's no snow. We're praying for that we can have even more. and just really trying to get the word out, trying to get people to come together.
And Edgar, what about in the Chippewa Valley? Is there a cohesiveness? Is this Hispanic population, are they together or are they kind of doing their own things in different pockets?
I think pretty much everybody tried to, one way or another, try to get together and help each other out. A lot of the time you kind of see some people doing their own thing and try to stay away from everything that is going on, but more likely the people that know each other kind of know somebody else and they kind of work together to basically get things done and help each other out.
Do you encourage that as El Centro de Conexión? Do you try to encourage people to become more civically engaged or group together and become more active in, I don't know, local politics or anything like that?
We in El Centro, we try to stay out of the politics. We just pretty much try to work with other nonprofit organizations to help each other out. One of the groups that we've been also working with is with the Home Monk community. One of the goals for us this year is to be able to have a place where people that need a system and could go to this area and to this place and get the assistance that they need. So by us working with the Home Monk community, we are planning and probably hopefully be on the same building that they are, and that way you have two different cultures working for one same purpose, which is help out.
And with the Hmong community, there is the Hmong Mutual Assistance Association. Mm-hmm. It's a pretty well established group that does. It's kind of, imagine it's somewhat along the same lines as El Centro.
Yes.
But it's been much more established, and so are you hoping that El Centro kind of evolves into that sort of a thing?
That's what our plan is. Even evolve to that, or even something bigger than that. I have some experience working down in Madison with a couple other Hispanic centers where people get assistance, and by us having this place, I think we will be able to grow even more as members and be able to get more assistance through the community.
Very good. We've got our first call of the evening, and a reminder to the other listeners out there that you can call in with a question or comment. The number is 1-800-228-5615, and we take this call from Eau Claire, and Kevin's on the air. Kevin, thanks so much for calling in. What's on your mind?
First-time caller, and I'm listening to the show. I've been in construction for 30-plus years, mm-hmm. and I've seen the influx of labor into this market and seen the results of labor in, like, the meatpacking industry and such. My point is that it benefits the mega farmers and benefits the large construction companies, but it drives down the opportunity for me to make a decent living.
Okay.
That's just my opinion.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Kevin. I appreciate it. And callers, you can give us your thoughts at 800-228-5615. What about that? There's a lot of concerns about Edgar Bernal. There's a lot of concerns that workers that are willing to work for less or less than minimum wage, even, that it is negatively affecting folks that have been doing construction or whatever for their whole lives, and now they're facing this pretty tough competition. What do you have to say to that?
I totally could side with that person that was just on the phone call, and definitely a lot of the time people try to go for the cheaper because think the cheaper would save them some money, and a mm-hmm. lot of the times these workers are just trying to get as much as they can as for the cheapest amount of money they could make, and I think that's what is happening, is that a lot of the times people that have been doing it for a longer time, they would try to charge more money, and these new immigrants will probably try to get it for less money to mm-hmm. just to make a living and send some money back home. There's a good and bad things, like you mentioned. I mean, some of these farms, that's basically what they do, hire immigrants to get paid less money than they would pay for somebody that is around here.
Right, but another point to that is, though, that farmers, I've heard, and we've had farmers on this program before I started as a host that hired migrant workers, undocumented even, and they said that they would not be able to staff their farms without them. Any thoughts on that, Father Tim?
I think that's true. I hear that a lot when I've gotten to know some of the owners of these farms and that, and I think the issue that Kevin brings up is a big issue that is definitely, you know, being discussed in the government, in policy, and it's, you know, not one thing. You know, I think a lot of times Hispanics may take the brunt of things like this, but I think it's a much larger process as an action, and it's a very complex one that has a lot to do with the economy, has a lot to do with immigration, has a lot with people just trying to make a living.
Right, and we haven't even talked about immigration. Very quickly, Edgar Bernal, I'll ask you, we are right at the top of the hour. We've got a lot of action happening in Congress. Hopefully they're looking at immigration reform. Any hopes in that front?
Well, that's what we're trying to hope, that will make a lot of people happy if that could go through.
Okay. Well, I wish we had more time. I'd like to thank my guests for their conversation this hour. Edgar Bernal, Father Tim Oudenhoven, Dr. Sue Peck, and Dr. Lisa Schiller. Thank you all so much. It was a great hour. Also, a big thanks to Hannah Weichel, who leaves us as Westside reporter and producer intern, who is now headed on to bigger and better things. Great job, Hannah. Also, thanks to Mort Cypress, Henry Lippold, and Hillary Curzon, Grace Fair, and Dean Collenbeck. Tune in next week, Thursday at 5, for a look into Western Wisconsin exports. I'm Rich Kramer, wishing you a happy summer, and we'll chat again next week.